My name is Cy Montgomery, and I'm the author of What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird.
Cy Montgomery is probably best known for her book, The Soul of an Octopus, which was a finalist for the National Book Award for Nonfiction. She's written 38 books of nonfiction. Her latest focuses on the chicken, both what we should know about the world's most familiar bird and what the bird actually knows. I recently spoke with Montgomery about both. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Cy Montgomery. You are the author of 38 works of nonfiction for both adults and children. You're probably best known for The Soul of an Octopus, which was a finalist for the National Book Award for Nonfiction, and also The Hawk's Way and The Hummingbird's Gift. You know, it was several years ago, but I remember enjoying your book, The Good, Good Pig. And now you've written about the most common of birds, the chicken. Can you give a brief description of what readers will find in this book and why the chicken?
Readers will discover that chickens are best met in person and not dead and cooked on their plate. They will find that instead of stupid, dirty, you know, unintelligent automatons with feathers, chickens are actually extremely smart, social, vocal, and affectionate. And that's why I wrote it, to reignite the wonder that we should feel when we're in the company of these extraordinary creatures.
Now, you start the book by talking about roosters, and your neighbor, Ashley, has a rescue farm, and when asked, she offers three pieces of advice. All of them, in essence, contain the same instructions: pick him up. And this seems, as you note, counterintuitive. Can you talk about, you know, the why behind this, and did it work for you?
Yeah, this was amazing to me. After more than two decades of living with chickens on our land, I had so much more to learn when my neighbor Ashley and I met. Her rooster rescue is necessary because people get rid of their roosters. Roosters often turn on you and will attack. So what are you supposed to do when a rooster goes on the rampage? To my amazement, she said, you should pick him up and cuddle him. And this actually works. And it's so interesting. When I had my own flock, and the flock, you know, continued for years, even when the original birds were gone, I would supplement them with little chicks that I would raise. And so the flock culture continued for a couple of decades. Back then, occasionally we'd get a rooster, and we did have this problem that usually when you were like fixing the lawnmower or something, you would look up and suddenly your rooster had turned and he was coming for you. And the thing is, they just get it in their head that you want to have sex with their hens. And of course you don't. But you have to convince the rooster that you are not a rival, that you pose no threat to his masculinity. He's the guy in the barnyard, and you want to be his friend. And if you pick him up and carry him around with you, exactly the thing you don't want to do with somebody who's attacking you, it really works. You're going to end up with a cuddly, friendly, gentle rooster.
Okay, so this is a quote. Not to hurt our humble brethren is our first duty to them, but to stop there is not enough. We have a higher mission, to be of service to them whenever they require it. Can you talk about these words that hang on a plaque over the door of your chicken coop?
Yes, they are attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. And the plaque was given to me by my neighbor Jarvis Coffin, who was very good friends with our flock. In fact, everyone in our flock used to go over and visit Jarvis and his wife, Bobby, sometimes mounting two sets of stairs to get to the second floor where they could look in the window where Bobby might be washing dishes or preparing dinner and induce them to come out and pet them and play with them. And I love that quote because saying, you know, first do no harm, like the Hippocratic Oath, sure. But let's be of service to our neighbors who might be human, or they might be avian, or they might be a fellow mammal or a reptile. And it kind of states what I want to do with my life. Because whenever you have friends from another group, whether it's, different group of people than yourself or another species, it just enlarges your capacity for joy and compassion.
We use the term pecking order in our everyday vernacular. But what does that mean in the chicken universe? Because you wrote that the pecking order is more about order than pecking.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, pecking sounds like this kind of nasty, mindless, mean girl thing to do. But order, now that's something we can relate to. In our own lives, order is important. And social relationships are important. Well, people do not realize that for chickens, your relationships with others is absolutely paramount. This is why the average chicken can recognize at least 100 other chicken faces, and they can recognize human faces as well. And it's so interesting to know that they look at faces as we do, much more so than other parts of the body, which scientists have discovered by basically making chickens wear disguises. But anyway, my flock was very, very gentle and peaceful, and there was very little pecking. But who your friends were, this was really important. Who you slept next to on your perch at night, it's always next to your two best friends. And it's very moving to me that chickens value relationships, as do we. And not everyone wants to be a leader, and that's good because, if you have six people in a room and everyone wants to be the leader, you're not going to get anywhere. Same thing with chickens. Often the alpha chicken or the lead chicken isn't necessarily the chicken that bosses anyone around. Sometimes that's the chicken, and often it's a rooster who watches out for danger and will settle squabbles with others in the flock. And often, if there's a contested piece of food, that chicken will end up with that piece of food. But it's also very common, particularly with roosters, that they will alert their flock to something really delicious and stand back and let the others enjoy it before they have any of it at all.
Yeah, I also liked what you said regarding pecking order, that chickens seem to understand that with great power comes great responsibility.
It's true.
So, talk to me about becoming an honorary chicken.
I think this is kind of what happened to me. When I raised our baby chickens, the first babies that hatched from eggs and were sent to me in the mail, they lived in my office. And I often wrote with a chicken in my sweater or a chicken on my head or a chicken sometimes walking across my keyboard, which explains some of my earlier books. But they, of course, considered me one of them. And what happens with birds who use the precocial life strategy, they're so precocious that pretty much out of the egg, they can run, they can peck, they can see, they can do everything. Unlike some of the helpless birds like baby robins, these like little naked things that are sticking their heads up with their beaks open, asking, Mommy, feed me. Chickens are very precocial. And the first thing that they do is they'll follow the first moving object they see. And naturally, this would normally be the mother. But for my chickens, as little chicks, I was the first thing they saw. I was their mother, and therefore I was a chicken. And because I was a chicken, I think I was welcomed into their universe in an intimate, inclusive way. And I gotta tell you, in the evening, when everyone is perching, and just kind of chatting in their lilting chicken voices. And it feels so peaceful and calm. And you're surrounded with love. And it feels great to be part of that universe. It feels great to be an honorary chicken.
You write about how some people attribute to their pets and children intelligence and insight that they simply don't have. But that's not what you're doing here. Beyond your, initial education with your own flock, when you wondered how chickens know to return to their roost and you were told chickens just know these things, you wrote about several things that astounded me, and you've already touched on the fact that chickens can recognize faces, but another thing is chickens both remember the past and anticipate the future?
Yes, and you can see why this would be an extremely useful thing. It's useful for us. That is what allows you to learn stuff and to remember things from the past and decide, I'm going to do things differently next time, or oh gosh, you know, this feels familiar. I think that hawk might be coming back. Or last time a hawk came, I hid behind this bush. All of those things have life and death consequences. It has been measured in the laboratory that chickens do actually have memories and that they are capable of feats of cognition that people denied birds for many years. Remember, we used to talk about bird brains. Well, now we know that anything can be miniaturized. Look at your phone. It used to take up a whole room to have a computer like that, and now it can go in your back pocket. Well, just because birds are smaller animals than us and have smaller brains than us, that doesn't mean there's not a lot going on in there. There is a lot going on.
Another thing that left me gobsmacked, you wrote about Melissa and her flock and that they had given her a name.
This was so thrilling for me. I met her in Washington, D.C., and one of the books that she'd written about her chickens was winning an award from the American Association for the Advancement of Science, as was one of my books. So we immediately started talking chicken. And she had a favorite chicken called Tilly. Tilly gives her name to her excellent blog, which is called Tilly's Nest. And Melissa noticed that whenever she was there, Tilly would say this one thing, but Tilly never said that to anyone else. It was a vocalization that kind of went like, bah, 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 bah. And it almost sounded like a trumpet, you know, that you sound to announce the coming of the queen. And, she figured out that this was the name that Tilly made up for Melissa. And Tilly has since died, but she taught this to other chickens. And now, whenever she comes in, that's what they say. And it's not just a greeting like, oh, here comes a person, because they don't say that to anyone but Melissa. And it's now known that a number of animals do have names for themselves and each other. Dolphins, for example, have these signature whistles that are essentially names. And other birds do that we know of. So while it was thrilling to discover, in a way, it kind of wasn't that much of a surprise. If your social life and your relationships is so central to everything you're about, as is the case with chickens, of course you'd want to have names for those most important to you.
All of the NPR member stations that air classical music will like to hear about why your hens liked to hang out beneath your neighbor's kitchen window. Why is that?
Oh, this was wonderful. They loved classical music. And when the classical music wasn't on, they would move away. But, you know, during fundraising, I'm sure they'd also run away too. But whenever the music was actually playing, the hens would congregate right there.
What do you want readers to take away from this book?
I would like them to fall freshly in love with this animal that everyone thinks they know and think of chickens beyond chicken soup.
Well, the book is What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird. Cy Montgomery, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it was a blast. I will talk chickens with you anytime.
That was Cy Montgomery, author of the book, What the Chicken Knows, A New Appreciation of the World's Most Familiar Bird, which was published by Atria Books. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning. And our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia. And for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
This week on You're Saying It Wrong.
Why is it a lame duck rather than a sitting duck, a wingless duck, or a sinking duck, or a crippled goose, or a feeble swan? I was like, yeah, why not?
With the election upon us, we'll have some fun with some election-related language. That's this week on You're Saying It Wrong from KMUW Studios.